60. He found a parking space a block away and jogged down Beverly to the intersection. A delicate framework floated in his mind, a three-dimensional outline of events. He didn't want to focus on it and risk breaking the tenuous threads, but he was nervous about letting it out of sight. As he crossed the street, he could see someone sitting on the second set of steps leading up to Kavach. His pace quickened as much as it could without turning into a run. He looked at Veek through the gate while he flipped through his keys. She wore a battered UCLA hoodie over a tank top. For a moment, he let his mental construct slide away. "Aren't you supposed to be at work?" he asked after a moment.
"Aren't you?"
"I just quit," said Nate. Her eyes lit up a little behind the thick frames of her glasses.
"Yeah?"
"Yeah, I had an idea. Not even an idea, just a thought."
"And it was worth quitting over?"
He shrugged. Data entry seemed a little pointless after going into space. She smirked and nodded.
"Are you going to be okay without a job?"
Nate shrugged again.
"I'm good for a few weeks. After that, I'll figure something out."
He opened the gate. "So what about you? Some people might think you were here waiting for me." She stuck her tongue out at him.
"You wish, just warming up. I called in sick again."
"Isn't that going to get you in trouble?"
"Maybe. I find it really hard to care too, you know?"
"I do."
"So what's your almost idea?"
He paused. The construct leaped back to the foreground of his thoughts, and he took a moment to avert his mental eyes. "I don't want to say yet. I'm still trying to get it right in my mind." Veek nodded.
"As it turns out, I do have news of my own. Want to hear something sort of creepy?"
"Do I have a choice?" She shook her head.
"First off, score one for computers over books."
"How so?"
"Debbie found so many little things she missed one of the big ones. I found Whipple Phillips this morning. He's on Wikipedia."
Everything shook. It took Nate a moment to realize he'd come to a dead stop, one foot on the stairs, one on the first landing. "You're joking." She shook her head. He raised himself up to the landing. "So, what's it say?"
"Pretty much just what Debbie had. He was a businessman from New England with investments in Idaho. Spent a lot of his later years taking care of his daughters and grandson. Died in 1904.
"He had a family? Are they still around?" She shook her head again.
"All gone. But you've heard of his grandson. Stop being melodramatic. H.P. Lovecraft," said Veek.
Nate's mental gears spun for a moment. The fragile framework came close to being thrashed.
"Wasn't he? He's a horror writer, right?" "The original horror writer, if you ask some folks," Veek said. "When H.P. was a little kid, according to several accounts, Grandpa Whippy told him all these weird stories about other worlds and monsters and stuff. When he got older, Lovecraft said those talks inspired a lot of his stories about Cthulhu and the elder gods and all that."
"You're shitting me."
"It's on Wikipedia, so it must be true."
"Cthulhu's some kind of evil god, right? The one with
tentacles. The octopus head?" "Technically, I think he's an immortal alien," said Veek. "But he's so powerful, he's a god for all intents and purposes."
"I didn't know you were into that stuff."
"I'm not. Wikipedia scores again."
Nate let it sink in. It pushed against the fragile construction and he shoved it away. He couldn't get distracted, not even by Veek. "Can we talk about this in a little bit? I have to get this idea worked out."
"Go,"
she said. She stood up and brushed herself off.
"I'll stop by in a while."
Nate stared at the blank wall next to his desk. Half of his apartment was in shadow despite the midday sun. Two of his windows had plywood over them. He was low on the list to get them fixed. He'd been staring at the wall for 10 minutes. While he did, the framework in his mind grew and became more solid. The threads spun into wires and the wires twisted into cables. He just needed to winch the cables tight and pull the little ideas into one big one. Underneath the paint there were words written in blood, Alexander Kotarovich's blood. He'd been right there in this apartment 113 years ago. He ran there to make sure his friends and co-workers knew the family of the Red Death was coming for them. Nate played the scene in his mind again. Kotarovich had been stabbed by one of the family members, probably a fatal wound back then, and he would have been educated enough to know it. He knew he was a dead man walking. He wasn't going to make it through the night, even if he ended up at a hospital.
definitely not if the family got him. Kotorovich had run through the night on New Year's Eve, bleeding the whole time, crazed doomsday cultists chasing him. He'd gotten into the building, run to the farthest apartment from the front door, and scribbled a warning that couldn't be washed away, and then... what happened next? He couldn't risk being caught. The stakes were too high. No matter how dedicated he was, there was a chance he'd talk if the family tortured him, especially as he got weaker from blood loss. He knew Kavach was the world's only chance, so he wouldn't let himself be taken prisoner. Nate turned and examined the room. He tried to picture it when he'd first moved in, when Tony first showed it to him. An empty box. Kitchen, closet, bathroom. He would have looked for somewhere to hide. The closet wasn't big enough to hide someone, even if it was filled with clothes. The cabinets in the kitchen were too small. Granted, everyone said people were smaller back then, but Nate couldn't even picture a child fitting inside those little boxes. The bathroom couldn't hide a cat, let alone a person. There was a narrow ledge outside the big windows. It was just wide enough for someone to stand on, but they'd be exposed to anyone down on the street, and Kotorovich would have been too weak to risk the ledge. If the scientist fell and didn't die, the family would have him. There was always the chance he would have hidden in another room or left the building altogether, but it didn't feel right. He would have been weak. He wouldn't have a lot of time. The family couldn't have been far behind him, too close to risk leaving the room and being caught once the message was written. Maybe there'd been furniture in the apartment, a bed to crawl under, a steamer trunk or wardrobe to hide in. But the first thing anyone did was look under the bed, and any piece of furniture in plain sight big enough to hide in would have been an obvious place to search. Ah, something in the back of Nate's head piped up. But Kotorovich knew people would be looking for him. He would have been ready. He would have had a trapdoor or a bolt hole or something in plain sight. Nate walked to the closet. A sweep of his arm pushed all the clothes to one side. He dragged his laundry hamper out and kicked aside a few pairs of sneakers. Down in the corner of the closet sat the panel he'd first seen 3 months ago. It was a foot tall and maybe 18 inches across. The width made it look less like a door. He ran his fingers along the paint-covered seams and the rough stretches around it where the framing had been pulled away. Nate bet whoever tore the framing off never even looked inside the little hatch. He went back to the kitchen and got a knife. The blade wasn't as sharp as the razors they'd used to open 14, and Nate found himself stretching and tearing the thick latex a lot more than cutting it. A few times the paint came away in strips, and he tossed them over his shoulder into his studio. It was hot work, made even hotter by the lack of circulation. The ceiling fan's air patterns didn't extend into the closet. He grabbed a shirt from the top of his hamper, the shirt he'd worn on his unexpected trip into outer space, and blotted his forehead again and again. It took Nate half an hour to carve around the rectangle. He pried at the panel with his fingernails but couldn't get enough leverage. After a few moments, he picked up the knife and stabbed it as deep as he could into the gap. He tried to lever the little hatch open. A tremble worked its way up through the blade. It was the slow, thick sensation of something dragged into motion after ages at rest. He felt threads of latex stretch and pop around the panel. A line of darkness appeared at the top of the hatch. The blade slid in deeper. Nate grabbed the edge with his free hand and pulled. The smell of 100 years rushed out to greet him in a dusty cloud. The panel was loose, but he could feel a tug of resistance. He pulled again and something rustled behind the door. He yanked his fingers away before realizing it was his own motions making the sound. He got a grip on either side and dragged the panel away from the wall. Light spilled into the space. The backside of the panel had a brittle loop of rope on it. The rope was attached to an elaborate lever arm held in place with blobs of plaster. They dropped to the floor as he pulled the hatch open. The lever was wrapped in a crumbling sheath that led back to a cobweb-covered pile of dusty sticks, plaster, and fabric. A pair of neon-green roaches darted across the pile and vanished into a patch of shadows. Nate studied the rat's nest of odds and ends. It was crammed into the space between the walls. Most of it was wedged under the bathtub's raised platform, which was recognizable even inside out and from this odd angle. One length of wood and fabric hung down to balance the assembly against a thick electrical cable. After a few moments, his first impressions broke down into the truth. He saw the loose buttons on the sleeves, each hanging by just one or two threads. The blobs of plaster clinging to the rope became individual finger bones. A pattern emerged from the random shadows, and he recognized the eye sockets and nose cavities of the sideways skull. One of the roaches felt Nate's eyes on it and skittered deeper into the building. "Alexander Kotarovich," he murmured.